farmers are often regarded as something like the backbone of America. They toil away in the middle of the country, I mean, yes, and elsewhere too, growing the food that feeds us, which sounds lofty, but is long, hard, dirty work, and apparently depressing, too. Rates of depression and even suicide are higher for farmers than in other professions, and that knowledge has spawned a range of responses to get help to farmers and their families. The attention is heightened a bit at the moment because Congress is moving toward the passage of another farm bill, and that bill could contain funding for a program to provide some help. Our guest is Michael Rosman, who is a clinical psychologist and a farm owner. He's the executive director of AgriWellness and the creator of AgBehavioralHealth.com. He's right in the heart of farm country in Harlan, Iowa. Michael, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for asking me to join you.
Was there a field of ag behavioral health before you?
There wasn't, that I am aware of. It's basically the combination of agriculture and behavioral health and involves the understanding of unique behavioral health issues that accompany involvement in agriculture. For example, the higher rate of depression that you mentioned and a much higher rate of suicide. I would say another factor that often affects behavioral health is exposure to farm chemicals. So agricultural behavioral health is needed by people engaged in agriculture.
Okay, so it is more than just the overall environment. You're talking about some potential chemical factors here as well.
Yes. There are many known insecticides in particular, but even some herbicides and fungicides have behavioral health effects. The insecticides that change our nervous system the most are those that are in the organophosphate, the carbamate, and the neonicotinoid families. I know those are all long words, and I'll just say them again. But
we've gotten used to the neonicotinoids in our neck of the woods because there's been a great emphasis on pollinators and the effect that the neonics have on bees around here, for example.
Yep, you're aware of what I was about to say. Thanks.
Sure. So we're talking about a much higher rate of suicide among farmers. How much higher are we talking about?
The rate of suicide in the farm population is at least twice higher than the next closest occupation, and the next closest occupation is heavy construction and extraction, like mining.
Mm-hmm.
The rate of self-harm among farm people is over 80 per 100,000 in any given year. The next closest is about 52 per 100,000. But even among returning military veterans, the rate is in the 30s per 100,000 annually. So the rate of suicide in the farm population is 2.5 times higher than it is for military veterans who are no longer engaged actively but have returned stateside.
So I'm curious about your own journey of discovery of all that was going on in farm country, because you're from, the family farm is there in Iowa to begin with, but you moved away and then you moved back. Is that right?
That is correct. After I completed my undergraduate work here in psychology at the University of Colorado, I sought and eventually was accepted into graduate school at the University of Utah. I went there for my PhD in clinical psychology, met my wife there. We moved to Charlottesville, Virginia, where I became a professor in the psychology department at the University of Virginia. After about 4 years there, we began to think that we wanted to raise our children on a farm, and we also wanted a different educational experience than what our children were probably going to be able to obtain where we were living in Virginia. We'd built the house on land originally owned by Meriwether Lewis. The public school system in the county would have served us. At that time, this was in the early 1970s, the completion rate of education in the public system was less than an eighth grade education. If we were to go to a private school, the schools were all filled with white students. We wanted our children to be exposed to a diverse cultural experience and to people in all walks of life. So it was a factor, as well as a long-term desire to move back to a farm because we thought it was the ideal place to raise our children.
Dr. Michael Rosman is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a clinical psychologist and a farm owner in Iowa, the executive director of AgriWellness and the creator of AgBehavioralHealth.com. We're talking about depression and suicide among farmers, which happen at a higher rate among farmers than in other professions, as you're hearing. Join us on the Exchange with questions, comments, thoughts about approaches to corrective measures. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So had you known when you returned to Iowa from Virginia what the situation was among farm families, or did your awareness and did the situation itself grow at the same time?
I knew that there was an unmet need for behavioral health among farm people. One of my high school classmates' father took his life, and that was a significant moment. He also ended the lives of several persons in his family because of depression and feelings of despair. I didn't understand it at the time. Coming to my senior year in high school in a little parochial school. It was something that nobody talked about then. But as I accrued education, I began to see that we have to take care of the agricultural population because we need healthy farmers. So when we made the decision to leave Virginia, it was to open up a private practice of psychology in my home area of Harlan, Iowa, as well as to begin farming. And I did both on a full-time basis for quite a number of years until I couldn't sustain the farm and all of the requests for assistance that I was receiving. So after about 25 years of farming, I turned it over to a renter, except for the Conservation Reserve Program land. This is land that is set aside and is planted in prairie grasses and flowers and plants of all sorts. It's good for wildlife habitat. It also helps pollinators, and it's a fun place to hunt and a place to spend time.
So I read one of your columns from last July about a farmer who committed suicide, and you praised his family members for speaking of their anger at his memorial.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, this family had been dealing with the father in the family, who was in his late 50s, maybe early 60s. He had had recurrent depression from time to time, and he had thought about suicide, but had not really carried it out. He had sought some behavioral health assistance, but terminated it when he felt that it wasn't really it wasn't cost-effective for him. Problems continued to mount over the ensuing years, and he ended up telling his family that they were concerned about him. They could see him becoming angry and closing up, wouldn't talk about things, and seemed to be brooding much of the time. When they approached him about obtaining professional behavioral health care, he said, "Look, it didn't help me last time, and I don't want you trying to do something that is going to make me do things against my will." So they left him alone, but 2 weeks later, he ended up taking his own life, and they were upset that he had refused their help, and they wished they had done more.
Michael, how typical is that case in the details like the "I can't ask for help in hard times" part?
It actually is fairly common, especially during hard times, because farmers want to be able to take care of themselves without having to reach out for outside help. successful farmers tend to be innovative, extremely hardworking, and they'll put up with adversity. They rely a lot on their own judgment. They often can spend much time figuring things out on their own, but these characteristics of being self-reliant and even risk-taking can work against farm people when they are in trouble emotionally because they don't reach out very well for help. They look at help-seeking as a sign of weakness. They don't want neighbors to find out about it because perhaps that will give neighbors an advantage in renting or purchasing land, or it may alter their impressions of him or her, so that's what the distressed farmer thinks. It's not necessarily realistic, but when you feel overwhelmed with stresses, sometimes our thinking gets off.
We're talking to Dr. Michael Rosman here on the Jefferson Exchange, a clinical psychologist and the owner of a farm in Iowa. He's also the executive director of Agra Wellness and the creator of agbehavioralhealth.com and writes a column called Farm and Ranch Life for a bunch of newspapers. You can join the conversation on the exchange as we talk about farmer depression and suicide and programs to work to curtail these numbers a bit. 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email is jx@jeffnet.org. John in Eugene says, I'm not diminishing the problem, and this will likely be addressed, but do farmers commit suicide more often, or are people who choose farming, or are farmers for family tradition reasons, more prone to suicide even before they start their careers? And wants to know if this was as big an issue before chemical use became so much more common in agriculture. That from John in Eugene.
That's a very wise question, and I'll take a crack at it if you want me to.
Sure, yeah, please.
I think that people who are engaged in agriculture have an innate drive to produce food and fibers and now renewable fuels because they are essential for advancing the life of humans and encouraging our expansion as a species. Before agriculture, humans weren't faring nearly as well when we were hunter-gatherers until some 12 to 15,000 years ago when we began to experiment with farming and raising livestock. The drive to acquire territories on which to produce food and animals probably stems back to our earlier ancestors in Africa and even back to the days before we were modern humans. Animals have a strong territorial drive. We're seeing it emerge a lot right now because the robins in my area are quarreling over who gets the most desirable spot and who gets the most, the males are quarreling over who gets the most desirable female robins.
That makes for noisy mornings, I'm sure.
Well, actually even kind of pleasant because birds singing are proclamations of their territory and their availability for mates. So humans, we have changed how we mark our territories. So we're not out singing and beating drums or like foxes and coyotes do. We don't use scat and urine to give pheromones that say, this is mine. But we do such things as build fences, plant hedges, undertake legal descriptions that say this territory is mine. Those urges emerge in us even when we leave agriculture. Many people mark our cubicles or our offices with signs that this is my territory, with a nameplate or photos of loved ones, pictures, artwork that says this is my territory. So the drive to acquire the most desirable land is somewhat similar to territoriality in animals. And I think those farmers who were most successful in acquiring the best land and have continued to make money over multiple generations, these are people who have survived many generations of elimination of those less able to survive. So these are the hardiest people who have ingrained factors that enhance their success. They're what I said before, a desire to continue through adversity, to work very, very hard, to rely on their own judgment, and sometimes when pressured, to work extra hard and even to take risks, such as working excessive hours without adequate rest.
So let me cut to the chase just a bit here, then, Dr. Rausman, because we're getting short on time, about five minutes left. Do you then counsel some people to get out of the business if it's just not working for them on a mental, emotional level?
That has to be their choice. Sometimes they do reach that decision because financially the opportunity to remain in farming actively is going to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, my role is to help people manage their behavior and stress in ways that allow them to continue to be farmers. We find that farmers do want to know what to do health-wise in order to function optimally. So good behavioral health practices contribute to remaining active as farmers.
Tell us about FRSAN, the Farm and Ranch Stress Assistance Network.
The Farm and Ranch Stress Assistance Network grew out of the Agro Wellness Program. We received some federal grants that were given out on a competitive basis to set up telephone hotlines and follow-up counseling in seven states. They were Wisconsin, Minnesota, North and South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, and Iowa. We set up the hotlines in states where they did not exist for farmers. They were answered by telephone responders or email responders who were familiar with agriculture so that farm people knew that they were being listened to by somebody who understood. We also provided follow-up counseling without any charge for people who needed it from 1 to 5 sessions. We did community education workshops for farm people on business skills, behavior management. We did a lot of social marketing, putting literature out in the farm service agencies, and in many cases attended fairs and expositions where we had booths to try to acquaint people with the need for behavioral health care and how to access it.
Now, so what's been the recent history with farm bills and funding for the Farm and Ranch Stress Assistance Network?
For some reason, it has emerged this year, and I think that reason is that we're going through rough times in agriculture in many parts of the country. The dairy industry in particular is struggling, especially in eastern U.S. Farm grain prices are poor. There is a threat of tariffs. There is an oversupply of certain kinds of foods. So it's been tough for the last 3 and going on 4 years to make a net profit. There has been a desire emerge among people in Congress to do something about it. I couldn't have predicted it, given the infighting that has gone across the political aisles in Congress, mm-hmm. but a proposal that has bipartisan support has come out of the House Agriculture Committee and has already been considered on the floor and not marked up at all. No changes. The Senate also recently released a version of the Farm and Ranch Stress Assistance Network. It's slightly different. It has bipartisan support, and it will provide many of the services that I just described earlier as best practices in the agro-wellness program.
So over the time that programs have been out there, did they seem to have made a dent in the incidence of depression and suicide, or at least been able to catch people before they get to the acting out thoughts of suicide?
They did in our 7-state area. We stabilized suicide during tough times. When the programs disappear, the rate of suicide increases along with the economic turmoil that perhaps fuels the increase in depression and stress-related behavioral health problems. So there clearly is a need for services. I would say that several media programs like this one have done a lot to inform the audience of people around our country and even outside our country's borders. The point is that this is a worldwide phenomena that is reaching out for behavioral health assistance when needed in the farm population.
All right. We will see what develops then as this farm bill works its way through Congress. But it sounds like there is support, you're saying, for the the continuation of the Farm and Ranch Stress Assistance Network. All right.
I think so.
Dr. Michael Rosman is a clinical psychologist and the owner of a farm in Harlan, Iowa. He's the executive director of Agra Wellness, which, as you heard, gave birth to the Farm and Ranch Stress Assistance Network. He's also the creator of agbehavioralhealth.com, and his column is called Farm and Ranch Life, which runs in newspapers across the country. Dr. Rosman, thanks so much for joining us today on The Exchange.